All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. And with me, as always, is the very flavorful and rude Mike Linneman, known for his articles on all that good art flavor. And with us today, we have a very special guest. This is our 10th anniversary Vorthos extravaganza episode. So with us, we have the one and only Matt Cavada.
All right.
Matt, thanks welcome for having to me. The show.
Welcome. So I don't know if we went through this earlier on, but we start every program or every cast we do with a flavorful gem. And since you're here, we figured, apparently Matt, you know, used to paint sometimes. Let's choose his art. And each of us choose one, and we ask our guests to choose one, too. It can be really anything you'd like.
I failed at that test, by the way.
Yeah, I failed at that test. I couldn't draw the turtle.
I failed at picking one.
Yeah, I told him, I was like, just, you know, one with, like, a little story. It'll be fine. You know, just take your time, pick out a favorite. And so I get an email with, like, 15, and I'm just like, oh, man.
God,
so much flavor. I mean, but still, Matt, you did art, you did your own flavor text that you contributed to cards. You also were in charge of flavor text teams, so I figured there's definitely a lot of gems in there somewhere to pull from. So
yes,
we're gonna definitely make you go first this time.
You for sure have to go first.
I'm going first.
You go absolutely first. Tell us about one piece. Why? Give us some flavor. Give us
so,
some
gem. I'm going to pick one from the Matt painted the picture and wrote the flavor text. You know, we'll go with full boat.
All right. What would it be called? What's the soccer term, Mike, where you get three goals in a game?
The hat trick?
Well, do you have a hat trick where you have the name, the flavor text, and the art? Do you have one of those?
What are the three?
The name, the flavor text, and the art.
Yes.
Do you really?
I do.
Wow.
I have two of them that I know of, but one that I don't want to talk about because I don't like parts of it.
Okay.
That's right. Crazy. But anyway, go ahead. Which one do you want to? Which one do you want to discuss?
Do you want to talk about the hat trick then?
Yeah.
You could do. It doesn't matter. If you had that one in mind, we could hit that one first.
Okay. I think I want to pick, Warren Weirding. Mm-hmm. You guys familiar with this one?
Oh, yeah.
Did not write that name, but I am particularly tickled with the image. It does something that not a lot of magic art does, and that is it doesn't decide between showing the caster casting or showing the result of the spell, but it's showing the result happening, which is apparently pretty rare. And I like it quite a bit. Like, you don't see two goblins scurrying about. You see a goblin, I don't know, oodling into two.
It's dividing like mitosis, like cellular division, right?
Yes, but grosser.
Or oodling. That's the official term. Well, yeah, everyone knows that goblins are just made out of purple jelly.
That's right. That makes... You know, if you bite into them, it's bubblegum flavor inside.
So was that the art description? Like, or did you come up with that on your own?
You know what? I don't recall if this one and the Weirding Witch, is that what it's called? The Weirding Shaman.
Yeah, Weirding Shaman, yeah. She has like a purple line down the middle of her head.
She has all sorts of things that are divided in two.
Yeah. You did the art for that one as well, right?
Yes. I mean, you can tell that they have the same color palette.
Yeah.
You know, golden sky with the glowing pink stuff and yada, yada, yada. But I can't remember if that was like intended to be a duo. I have to imagine that it was.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't know that I would have intuitively sandwiched them together like that.
But they do, the mechanic is the same. Like
that's why I think they probably did ask for it. They're smart that way.
They're good at this.
The flavor text is kind of fun. At the time we were doing, this was either Shadowmoor or Eventide, I don't remember which one. One of the creative through lines was the idea of nonstop fear that Kithkin mainly were, they would survive based on the fact that they were afraid of everything. And if you're afraid of everything, you don't put your head in the hole and you don't step in the thing and you don't go out in the rain and you just basically avoid almost any kind of potential anything. It's like Marlin from Finding Nemo.
Right. It's like, what is that? Agoraphobia or something, right? Where you're like afraid to leave your house.
Yeah.
You're just like a recluse or whatever.
So anyway, I invented in this piece of flavor text the racist book of Kithkin called the Book of Other, basically saying anyone who isn't us is bad news.
Also, there wasn't a whole book you wrote on like straight up Kithkin racism. That doesn't exist. It's in WotC Creative. It's his giant tome.
But there's a little humor tossed in there for the benefit of the listeners. The flavor text is, and that is when it was discovered that boggarts have just half a brain. Ta-da! I am pretty sure that this racist tome, the Book of Other Folk, is mentioned in a couple of other
Two other cards
as well.
Yeah.
Did you write the other two?
I don't know. I would like to think that I'm not the only Kithkin racist among them.
So,
oh man,
that's hilarious. That's... So, I mean, what's your kind of like? What is your view on humor then in flavor text? Like, I guess you're for it, obviously.
Yes. Right. No doubt. Magic is a pretty serious game, and it's somewhat intellectually demanding. And every once in a while, it's good to release that pressure valve,
right?
Especially when the humor is based on some amount of intellectual whimsy or what have you. If it's just flat out like slapstick or whatever, I think most Magic fans might find that a little bit offensive. At least I hope they would. But there are some goofball pieces like The Root of All Grievels. It's so stupid.
Right. Well, so bad, it's good. So
it has no meaning. It's just ridiculous. But I'm all for it.
Yeah. I really like it when it fits the card. Like when it's not taking away from what the card's trying to do or taking away from the art. Like, I wrote an article a while ago that gave me, I think, a misconceived rap that I hate all humor in Magic whatsoever, which is totally not true.
Strongly dislikes it.
I don't like, for example, Gorilla Titan, when the art is super serious looking and then you read the flavor text and it makes the whole card into a big joke.
Right.
Like, I think that's kind of detrimental to the art. But when you have something like Hot Soup or whatever, where it's already goofy and it's already got this like light kind of atmosphere, then like I'm all for it. I love it because I agree. Like it definitely is like, it serves like, you know, a release for that. Like you're constantly stressed trying to figure out, do I attack? Do I not? And then you get this nice little reminder that it's just a game. Like you're supposed to be having fun.
So I think that flavor text has something to do with a bunch of bananas. Is that true?
Yeah. It's, I want a banana this big.
Right.
Yeah.
what that one does, you sort of alluded to it, is that the humor comes at the expense of the card. It comes at the expense of the art, which is, I agree, that's a problem.
Right.
In fact, my team and I are working currently on a set of creative guidelines, like a top level creative guidelines for anyone who works partners or internal folk at Wizards. And one of the sections is about humor.
Okay.
And the ink is not done drying, but currently there is a rule that says if there is going to be humor, you direct the irreverence outward. And you use that humor to accentuate character, to accentuate what's in the magic IP.
Right.
As opposed to using it as the butt of the joke. It's much harder. It's harder to do, but it's not impossible.
Right. I think it's a better payoff, too, because, I mean, it's kind of like, and it has to do with, like, even when you have a card, like, you read it top down. So you're getting, you know, you get the flavor text last. So if you use the name and the art and the mechanic to kind of set up the tone for something funny, then when you read it, it feels like a payoff. And it's like, oh, man, that was funny and it made me feel good. This card's awesome. And you just get a great kind of response as a player. But if it's serious, and then the flavor text is funny, it's kind of like comes out of nowhere and just doesn't jive with the rest of the card. And it's like...
That makes sense.
Yeah. It just kind of ruins it for you.
Do it big. Go to 11 if not. I mean, don't sit at 9. That's stupid.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about this until you mentioned it, but if you look at those, if you look at name, then art, then text box, then flavor text, it actually gets deeper with each section.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. The name should inform, basically the name informs you of what you're getting into. Then you get the art and that kind of sets up the whole visual of like, this is what I'm experiencing. Then the mechanic reinforces that through gameplay. And then the flavor text is there just,
it's the added,
it's like icing on the cake. It kind of ties everything back together into this one. Sometimes, that's how I look at it.
Sometimes it's Alice in Wonderland. Sometimes it's really just topical.
And depending on the three steps that came before it, like, I think anyway, like the flavor text, if the other three are doing the job perfectly and you don't need the flavor text to again reinforce what you've already gotten in those first three steps, then that's a great time for you to throw in some world building or maybe do some obscure thing that doesn't exactly tie into the card. But sometimes you have these mechanics that may not be super intuitive and the flavor text can really save you, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of mental stress because you're like, oh, I don't really understand that card. But then you read the flavor and it's like, oh, okay, now I have a reference to kind of build off of it. It makes it easier to understand.
That becomes especially helpful when art or mechanics get switched late in the game.
Right.
For one reason or another, it happens. And all of a sudden you have this mashup of things that don't make sense at all. And you need some ribbon to ground it in some kind of reality.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Like if you have a guy that, I'm trying to think of the example that you talked about this on when you were with Mark Rosewater on his podcast. I think it was a guy with First Strike.
Mm-hmm.
So he was shown with like a long spear and then they switched it to Vigilance. So like the art isn't going to help you because it's already done.
Right.
And you need to somehow tie that in the flavor. Otherwise it's just, it's not going to make as much sense.
Right. Right. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a swing and a miss.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
It happens.
Yeah.
Everyone punts, right?
Right.
Everyone
Mike
does.
Likes to remind me of that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So what about your gems?
Mike, you want to go?
Yeah, I've got, this actually took us a long freaking time because apparently you've done a few paintings, and I had a short list, and the one I'm going to choose is Jaya Ballard, the Taskmaker. Right. And not only because I find out that Ballard's actually a location, I have cousins that live in Seattle, and I'm like, do you want to go to Ballard? I'm like, is that a magic-themed neighborhood? What is this? No, turns out that's just the name of the neighborhood. Didn't know, had no clue.
It's actually an awesome place.
Yeah, it's pretty,
it's a really cool place to live.
Good beers, less hipsters. Like, it was nice. But this artwork is one of those things that, God, it's so hard to do. It's hard to get the right amount of woman major character and having the ability to say, all right, the costuming's cool. People want to cosplay. People can't wait to see flavor text of this mythical person that has just been talking hot damn amazing things for years. And it finally came out, and it's not this scantily clad blonde woman that is all too typical in gaming. It's this different person. You're like, oh.
Have you talked about this before?
No.
No? Because that was like the inception story of this image.
Really?
I painted this while I was working at Wizards in my first stint, and the art director at the time assigned it to me, and I said, I'm not doing this one, dude. I don't want the responsibility, because right. I knew that I wasn't going to make the thing that people wanted. There were some like fringe images of her from the distant past, and she was like a cross between Maxim magazine and Gandalf. It was like everything I hated. Purple robe.
Yeah.
Somehow a window for her cleavage. It was just the dumbest. And he wouldn't not let me do it. He just told me to do it the way I wanted to do it. And I was like, as long as you're going to protect me from the flaming, I'm in. Because I told him I was covering up all of the skin. And sure. I guess he was interested in watching me crash and burn. But it didn't turn out that way. People for the most part, responded pretty positively.
I mean, that was Jeremy Cranford, probably. Yes. His tenure, yep.
Yeah, good dude.
So there, when the Commander products came out this past fall, the red one wasn't announced yet. And so many people, so many older women that I noticed, people in their 40s would say, oh, Jaya's the person I actually identify with because she's not 15. She looks like an actual woman. She looks something that I want. You know, when I dress up to things, I do that. And I want to see a card of her again. We got a glimpse. Just, can we get another Planeswalker? And Dreddy came out and people were like, yeah, that's cool. But, oh, just, we want it so bad. Give it to us again. And even now, it's this visceral image of, you know, I'm sure people ask about artist proofs and prints of this image all the time. And okay. I think it's fantastic in that it's just, it's quite right simple in its composition, but it doesn't do anything wrong. It does everything on point to, oh, this lives up totally to the expectations that I would assume this to be. And it's interesting that you pained about it. That's fantastic to hear.
Ant sees me cringing a little bit. There are some parts of this that I won't talk about, but I can see, like, there are some skeletal weight carriage problems that bother me and have bothered me. And there's some other things that if I don't want to say it, because once you say things, you can't unsee them. Right, so I'm just going to, I'll just say that there are things that if I were to do this again, I would adjust.
Sure.
I mean, honestly, I think that for me, that my favorite part about that whole piece is that, like, Jaya, in my opinion, is so beloved because of her attitude. Like, she's got such a great, all of her flavor text one-liners just have this
sass.
Spunk and sass to them, right? And that, between just her posture and the way she's twirling fire on her finger, is all you need to know. Like, you look at that and you're like, yeah, that's exactly how Jaya would stand if she was just,
you know, I mean, what the greatest thing in the world is? The greatest thing in the world is that an artist can paint a picture and think a couple of things and put it into that picture. And then there will be people who will look at it and think things and derive from the image things. And it, I can't tell you how rewarding it is to hear you say all that, because that's absolutely what I was trying to cook into this image. It, when it works, it feels really good, especially when you hear that it's working.
Right. Well, right. Yeah.
People keep asking about it and saying, hey, Matt, make another one, get up and do it. And you're like, oh, cripes. Why don't control that, guys? I mean, Well, whatever. And, you know, the game has changed visually so much in the past 3 years. I mean, that's not like 8 years ago. You look at the game then to now, and it looks about as different from the mid-90s to Time Spiral. I mean, it's significantly different. So anytime there's any refreshing of imagery, that's a cool thing, like Teferi getting the From the Vault treatment and saying, oh, this is what he looks like in 2013. You're like, oh, okay, I like that. I like that update. It looks good. So this would be someone, I mean, I think it'd be really great to see it sometime in the future. And since Chandra has – she has her story there, it's – you know, do we not know what happened?
I don't have I don't have any secret intel on what would or would not happen, but I would doubt that there would be another, because Jaya Ballard is in a lot of ways the sassy hothead that Chandra is.
Right.
I don't know that. I mean, Chandra is so important to the IP at this point, that having some other character occupy that same space seems unlikely.
Yeah.
If you're going to have an awesome image of a confident female character slinging fire, it's got to be Chandra.
Right. I will say that it would be cool if there was just maybe a single Uncharted Realms article that talked about Chandra, like, I don't know, going back to Ragatha, to the Carol Keep. Jai is there because she forgot her goggles, right? And instead of the two of them getting along and having like a fun fire-filled day, they get in a fight, and that's like a Planeswalker versus Planeswalker dual deck, Jaya versus Chandra, red on red. Like, that would be pretty awesome.
Well, based on the fact that they can both pretty much just be enveloped in flame, I don't think either of them could do anything to the
other. That's what would be, that would be the draw, like the draw, like it would literally be at the detriment to everyone else in the nearby area.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they would come out fine, but
burned out village.
It'd be one of those things where they like are sitting down exhausted, and they like, you know, rib each other, laugh, and then look around, and just like everything is decimated.
Yeah.
Like just everything around them is burned to a crisp.
That would be fun.
But
be nice.
I can dream, I guess.
Well, Ant, what do you got for us? What are you picking?
All right, so mine is Protean Hulk
from
what is this? Guild Pact, right? Or Descent? No, Dissension. I always forget. Yeah, I think this is Dissension. But anyway, this is the original go at Ravnica. It's a beast that, Matt, I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Oh yeah. Love this guy.
But I picked this one for two reasons. One, I absolutely love the flavor text on this card because it actually gives like a little bit more depth to the Gruul than like I feel like a lot of their cards do. Like most of them are just them yelling about random stuff, but this one actually shows them looking at their prey, analyzing it, realizing, hey, we can knock out two birds with one stone here, have meat and eggs, complete breakfast meal. So it's time to eat. And it's just, like, I feel like it gives great insight into kind of like what drives them. I mean, at least while they're under the rule of Borbori Gaimos, or I don't know.
Borborygmos.
Borborygmos, right. So I love it for that reason, but also because it reminds me of this old Vorthos article. I think, Matt, it was when you were writing for Daily MTG where you talk about the fact that there is a lot of hidden things in the eggs.
Yeah.
On the back of the creature. I think one of them happens to be a fetus.
There's a human fetus in there, yes. There's like a
which
little
is pretty
new,
cool.
Some other strange oddities.
But I always loved that art because it's such a, like if somebody asked me what a creature that looked like it was made out of meat and eggs, like two different types of, those are such weird things to combine on a creature, but it works to the point where it kind of is appetizing. Like I could see them wanting to eat that. It makes sense.
I don't know so much about eating it, but from an art perspective, I'm proud of this for almost the same reason that I have, that I wince a little bit about Jaya Ballard. And that is because this image, I feel like it really captures the fact that this thing is sagging under its own ponderous weight, that it's huge and fat and its own body is sort of slumping down and sagging over the rocks. And then the rocks themselves are buckling in some cases. Right. I mean, that's total art goob stuff that nobody really cares about, but the artist does.
Yeah. But I mean, those are like the subliminal things that like the normal viewer of the card may not notice. But I guarantee you, if like that skeletal structure didn't make sense and the rock wasn't buckling, then subliminally I would look at that and be like, that doesn't make any sense, without even registering right. all those little details, you know? So, I mean, those are equally important as hiding human babies inside of green gelatinous protein.
Gotta do it.
Like, well, why not?
So the inspiration for this flavor text came from two sets earlier in Ravnica. No, it was one set earlier in Guild Pact, with the card Borborygmos, whose very words we're talking about in this flavor text. And I remember one of our creative angles for Ravnica was to view the guilds through the eyes of the other guilds. It's one thing to rah, 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 our guild is best, but to see what the other guilds would say about them does two things. It reveals something about the guild in question and about the guild who's saying the things. Right. In this case, we get on Borborygmos, you get a quote from, I would consider it to be one of the most diametrically opposed guilds of them all. I mean, Gruul are as anti-establishment and rock and roll as it gets. And then the Orzhov are nasty rules lawyers and twisted, you know, scumbags. So what you get from the Orzhov is the quote, "It's easy to see why the Gruul dirtbags follow him. The only orders he gives are crush them and we eat." The whole gag is played out over three cards. There's a second card in Guild Pack called Wreak Havoc, where you see a bunch of Gruul barbarians just destroying the place. So, of course, this little bit of flavor, it's super simple. It just says crush them. It's the second part of the Borborygmos mantra. That was called out in my mind by one of the more unlikely flavor purveyors, and that is the editor. At the time, the person who was editing flavor text was the rules editor.
Okay.
And she was like super focused on everything, like all T's crossed, all I's dotted, everything perfect. And that she raised this opportunity to me was awesome.
Right. Cool. So she just came. You were in charge of the team at the time, the flavor text team?
Yes. Yeah.
So she came to you and said, like, this should say crush them?
No, this could just be the other half. And I was like, yes!
Done!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's teamwork. Yes.
Right. That is what it is.
Of course.
See, that's the difference between a good editor and a great editor.
She is great. She's absolutely one of the baddest ass kickers at Wizards. Her name is Del Loggle. She's
Del.
Oh, okay.
He's a force.
Yeah. Awesome. I will have to thank her on Twitter.
The Gruul were my favorite. Actually, no, I'll amend that. The Gruul are my favorite.
So you're a Gruul? That's your guild?
You know what? I don't think that I am Gruul as much as I want to be Gruul.
Okay.
Why?
You know how I was saying earlier that Magic is pretty intellectual and high-minded and so on and so forth. In order to appeal to that kind of crowd. You have to be on your game like all the time, thinking steps ahead and providing that sort of smarts. And red green across the board, or gruel in particular, offer an opportunity to do the opposite, which is to just, you know, rage against the machine. You know, who needs thinking? Smash.
Yeah. It's overrated anyway.
What's that?
It's overrated to think or even get involved in it. They don't care. Smash, eat. That's fine.
They were fun. They're fun to play too.
They are fun to play for sure.
You know what? I've played. I played in a 6-pack draft with some guys from work where we played all 6 of the Ravnica sets.
Okay.
I picked only gruel cards. I knew right from the start I wasn't going to bother picking anything else. And then while I was playing, I wasn't going to think. It was like speed chess in the park where they just move, slam. And I was like, attack. And I found it so liberating to not think. I was just like, you know what? Screw it. You think.
Right. Attack. You're on your toes.
I don't even care. It's awesome.
That's pretty cool. I like Rakdos myself. I like that. To me, they have a very like heavy metal vibe where it's like mosh pit. Like, I'm gonna forget why I'm here for a minute, but really, like, the reason for them being there is very self-driven, and it's just they're super ambitious in their quest to have a good time.
Yeah, that's the part that's so awesome about the Rakdos. And they're another favorite of mine. And it's that while the gruel might destroy stuff, and they will, or they'll kill people, they will, the Rakdos do it for the purpose of entertainment, not to take down the man, or not in the name of having no name. It's fun. It's because it feels good. And that, how do you not appreciate that?
Right.
Yeah, there's the murder part.
There's the blood and the gore, but whatever. It's interesting. The two guilds are like they both approach, like, the Rakdos have a very black goal, I think, in that they want it's all for them. Like, and they go about it in a very red way. Like, how do I improve myself? I'm going to have a good time, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm not going to follow any rules. That's like a red approach to a black goal. And the gruel have a green goal in that they don't want society anymore. They think it's stupid. They want to get back to nature. And they also approach it in a very red way, where they're like, we're just going to blow everything up.
That's interesting, because if you think about it, the is it or the same way, they have a blue goal, which is knowledge and discovery, but they go about it in the most passionate and non-methodical way that science could be undertaken.
Yeah, the only opposite one is the Boros, because they have a very red goal, right? They want everyone to be able to live freely, but they do so by imposing laws on society, which makes the Boros are like a little confused.
I'm not exactly sure where the red comes in.
I think it's kind of like, to me, the Boros is kind of like U.S. like the USA, where it's like we want everyone to be able to live and have freedom, but in order to do that, we need a little bit of structure because stuff can get out of hand. So they're,
or maybe it's just cops with flamethrowers.
Yeah, maybe.
Do it. Put it in the art. Done.
Oh my god! Even like SVU with flamethrowers. Stapler. I mean, he is a hothead. It kind of works.
Yeah, that could work. We'll make it work.
Just pissed off cops. That's the Boros.
That's
angry cops, and the Azorius are the judges. But anyway, all right. So first things first, I feel like we should just get a good sense of who... Oh, I lost sound here for a minute. Of who you are currently at Wizards, maybe like a little bit of your history. I know like you started as an artist, but we might have listeners who have no idea, you know, where you got your start with magic. So
can we postpone that topic just for one bit?
Yeah,
it occurred to me after the flavor gem section that we might acknowledge just for a minute the significance of our 10-year anniversary.
That's a great point.
A notion hit me earlier today while I was thinking about it, that at the time when Vorthos was created, flavor was very much a thing that happened in snacky bits. Here is a card, and here's the flavor that's contained in this card. And there are 15,000 of them out there that each carry some bit of that for people to enjoy. And I'm super lucky to have been around at Wizards at the time when the pendulum was starting to swing toward, we care about that, and we're willing to acknowledge the people who care about that. That's awesome. And at this point, 10 years later, the pendulum has swung so far the other direction that we're not even talking about little snacks. Like, the whole thing, like the whole magical meal, is in some ways driven by flavor at this point. The story is having an incredibly, incredibly strong effect on what's going on, and the characters are larger than the cards they're on. And the fact that you can have a planeswalker with a crappy card and people don't go, "Hate that guy," they're just waiting for the next one to be better. Right. That's amazing. Like, that is incredible. So I think that the three of us, we're all pretty fortunate to be caring about this kind of stuff at this time. Because if we were all gung-ho about this in the first 10 years of Magic, we would have been lonely dudes. Lonely, lonely dudes.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, and Mike gives me a hard time about this all the time, but like when I got into Magic, I didn't have any friends who played at all. Just something about the art and the fantasy property really kind of drew me in. And I collected them solely for the names, flavor text, and art. That's the only thing that I cared about. It was, for me, akin to like going to a comic book shop once a week and buying a new comic book. I would just buy a couple packs and read a little bit more about the story.
See, because you realize that you, I would say in the early 2000s, you were a myth.
That person did not exist. That's why I still kind of think he's kind of bullshitting us.
But at the same time,
he says it enough. It's so passionate.
I believe they did exist, but the powers that be that were making the game were not making it aware that anyone like that was out there.
Well, it's funny. Yes, and this is going to come full circle, but a couple days ago, I think it was Friday, I went to Target and I saw that Magic Origins was available. It was on sale, right? So this is the first set that I wrote flavor text for. So I was like, oh, I'm going to buy 5 packs, one for each Planeswalker because I'm a Vorthos. And I'm going to see if I can pull a card that I wrote names or flavor text for, because I thought that would be a cool moment, right?
So if you did 30 out of 200 and some, you've got a pretty good chance.
I got at least one card per pack, which was pretty cool. That's like kind of my awesome. I guess. But I'm standing there and I look to my right and there's this kid. He looks like he's about, I don't know, maybe second or third grade. And he's looking at Origins packs. So I just start talking to him. I'm like, oh, you play Magic? I'm like, what kind of deck do you run? Like, what's your deck? And he just, without skipping a beat, just looks up at me. He goes, I collect these things for the art and the stories at the bottom. And just looks right back at the cards. And I looked at him like, dude, I'm you. Like, 10 years from now, I'm like, I'm you. Like, I was so just blown away because I've never met anyone like that before. You know, like, everyone's always just like, like they're into the flavor, but they're also into the mechanics and like tooling their deck and stuff. And I was just like, man, I'm like, kid, you have no idea who you're talking to.
So I remember getting an email from the website editor at the time. His name was Scott Johns, and he asked me if I wanted to write this column. And I wonder if it was just his, if it was this his notion that maybe there was an underserved segment of the population. I'm not sure whose idea that was, but I'm really glad that that person had it. Because it was instantaneous that the proof was there that that audience existed, like instantaneous.
Yeah.
Like the response was huge, even that, from my poorly written, misspelling ridden, lousy first article. It was there.
Yeah. That article for me was huge because that was like the first time that I was like, okay, yeah, there are definitely other, like, I'm not insane. I'm not like there are other people out there. We all are, yeah, in a good way. But like, I mean, it was just not, it was so nice to have that reassurance that like if they're writing if they're dedicating a day, like an article on the website to this kind of content, like that there has to be more people out there than just me. Like it was just nice to see that, especially after having the three psychographics of Timmy, Johnny, and Spike, and I was just like, I don't care about any of that stuff. Like none of that really mattered to me because I just wasn't playing competitively ever. I mean, I wasn't even playing, to be honest. I just wasn't playing the game because I had no one to play against. So to see like Vorthos and be able to just definitively say like, yes, I fit into this group of Magic players. And it even had like a cool fantasy name. I was just like, oh, this is like my people. I just need to figure out where they are. And then I'd go to like, and then I still couldn't find them. You know? It was still hard because everyone cared more about the game. But
that that name, I would love to say that I thought really long and hard to try to figure out a proper good thing to go alongside the three that Rosewater had breathed into life for so many years, but I'm telling you, I did not think that this concept was going to be a thing for more than a week. I figured, like, oh, I'm going to make up this funny name because we're not talking about a regular person. We're not talking about Joe or whatever. We're talking about someone who likes to live in a fantasy world. So I'm going to give him a fantasy name, blah. And it was the first goofy Klingon name that came out of my head. But
isn't it from one of your friends, like, characters, or is that just part of the article?
That's part of the mythology of
okay.
But I will say that guy who I was referencing, like
the doodle. What about the doodle?
The doodle was doodled by the guy getting choked in the Goblin Pile Driver art.
Are you serious?
Yes.
No way.
He was my inspiration on both of those things.
So, Mike, that was something we talked about last night when we were setting up Skype, was that in the Goblin Pile Driver art, the guy getting choked by the goblin was Matt's roommate at the time, right?
College roommate. Not at the time.
Oh, not at the time. Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Just previously. But so he drew the original Vorthos.
Yes. That was his D&D character when we were playing years ago.
That's super funny.
Like I needed a drawing of a character that didn't look like I drew it, so I had to call up one of my buddies, and that became Vorthos.
Dude, I need a weird wizard. Send me a weird wizard.
His character's name, but I'm pretty sure that his character was probably named something unsavory that I couldn't use.
It's been 10 years, which is in Magic time ridiculous difference. I mean,
it's half the life of the game.
It is different art directors, sets have been revisited, things are blown up. We restarted the entire multiverse, and in 2005, I mean, the game was already around for 12 years.
Wasn't that Kamigawa, right?
2005 was right when it was transitioning to Time Spiral.
To Time Spiral. Right, exactly, which was right about when I left Magic briefly in Mirrodin because I went into high school. Like, I started collecting years ago, all the way up until high school, didn't have a single friend that played Magic. So I went into high school thinking, like, am I really going to keep having this, like, hobby alone? It didn't make any sense, right? So quit for 4 years until I went to college. And my fall semester in college was the Time Spiral pre-release. And I was in Philly for school, and this was still when they had the huge pre-releases at, like, convention centers that were kind of like GPs now. Like, it would just be a whole bunch of people. And I'm just like, I'm going to go. And going to Time Spiral and kind of seeing all the nostalgia from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, just, it was like paddles to the heart. I'm like, I'm back for good at that point, which was pretty cool. Fantastic. But,
so how have you seen this progress, Matt, in that 10 years ago, inception, 5 years ago, finally, other people started writing about this very visibly. There was always the forum. There was always Phyrexia.com that people got super excited about it, but it was small. It was a small grouping. And then finally Gathering Magic, which we're both from, every Wednesday we start to write flavor stuff. Is that interesting to see that go full circle to say, oh, this was such a niche thing. It's freaking everywhere now. And we integrate a thing. We had a San Diego Comic-Con to say, we're going to do more flavor. We're going to do more storyline stuff. How do you interact amazing. With that now?
I think it is amazing. But I don't think that it's amazing. Like, wow, I can't believe we're doing this. Like, it is not like that at all. I truly believe that this is the right way to do it. That Magic is, it's in a little bit of a, I would say, like a late teens, early 20s phase where
okay,
it has experienced a lot of things, but it hasn't quite figured out what it is yet. Okay. It's a game. It's also an IP that lives above that game, and it's currently waiting to see which of those two roads it pushes its chips in on.
Right.
I do think that that's the right place to be. It's the right place to be. If it was all games all the time, we would be back where we were in 2005, worrying about what Pro Tour players thought of our cards.
Right.
Guess what? That's like 1/10 of 1% of people who play. Like, you can't yeah. make all your decisions to please that fraction. Of course, some decisions absolutely are, but the crowd pleaser decisions have to be made for people who want to be entertained. And what entertains people more than stories?
Right.
That's been true since we were cavemen.
Right. I mean, it's true. It's crazy that, like, Magic right now is in such an interesting spot, like, from a creative standpoint, because if you compare it to, say, like, a comedian, right? If a comedian develops an act that they think is really, really funny, some guys will take the 10% that they think their jokes are working the least and replace it with 10% new material. And they'll just kind of continuously rotate out, slowly getting better, which is, in my mind, how, like, the mechanics of the game have been working. Every so often you'll retire some things that just kind of aren't working and introduce some new stuff. Whereas other comedians, when they get their act to the point where they're going to do their HBO special and they do it, then they scrap it and start over. Because right. to them, that raw creative process is kind of what keeps them fresh to their audiences. And that is the creative half of Magic, where you do a plane, it's awesome, and then at the end of the year, you're like, well, we got to do a completely new setting. So you're kind of in this weird, almost like perfect marriage where you get to do both of that. You get this thing where your fans can come back expecting the same similar type of gameplay, but you can do it in a totally new setting
right.
that makes that familiar stuff feel alien, but you still understand it. It's such like a weird dynamic that totally works.
Well, one of the things that makes it work is the fact that, let's say you were a humongous Greek mythology fan. And Theros wooed you in. You were sold.
Jam.
Yeah, you're all about it. And for three sets, you are so tickled by this wonderful mixing of like European fantasy and Greek mythology. And then it's over. Like, what is this other place? Like, I don't care about Mongol China and wizards. Like, I don't know. I don't care about that. That person could be lost. But if we did our job right, that person also fell in love with Jace or Elspeth or someone who doesn't go away. The Planeswalkers play such a humongous part in that, that you get to follow them around to all of the crazy worlds that they visit, knowing that it's their story. It isn't right. just the story of what happened to so-and-so on Tarkir. Well, that we'll see that. But that's like what happens with the Binars on Star Trek Next Generation. Like, we go to their world for an hour, and then we get to leave because we care about Worf and Data and these guys.
Right.
Hopefully that's what people are going to start feeling with Magic, is that they've got their Enterprise crew, and now they get to go and help me out with the nerd language. They can boldly go to new
where no plane has gone before or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Right. It's cool. It's honestly like the Planeswalkers themselves are super relatable just on that level where they're in the exact same boat as every player, because as a player, I go to Tarkir and I've never been there before. And there's a Planeswalker who goes to Tarkir that maybe hasn't ever been there before.
Right.
So it's really easy for me to understand why they would do certain things, because I'd be like, yeah, I totally would have to kill a native and reanimate him as my undead servant to show me around. Cause like, I don't know, I don't know anything about Tarkir. I mean, Soren, that's his method, right? Of procuring a tour guide.
I understand
but...
why you consider yourself Rakdos. Some people would shake a hand and ask for help.
Look, if he wasn't going to offer, I needed to come up with an ulterior method, right? I mean,
makes sense. But that also has responsibility to it of sorts, in that, say, a very beloved character decides to go away for whatever reason is. Say Jace would not get built anymore. Say Jace dies and is just gone. It's like Venser, for example. People were like, oh, Venser's cool, I guess. But Venser's not Jace.
Right.
Jace is almost unkillable at this point, thus far. And seeing Elspeth die and seeing the visceral reaction of people saying, what the hell? I don't want a Johnny. I want Elspeth. People dress as Elspeth. Why is Elspeth dead? When's she coming back? And I kind of like seeing that reaction of people being so invested.
Yeah.
Because that didn't happen. I mean, you saw the Weatherlight crew and you're like, yeah, there's a lot of them, but never really.
Took a battle axe to the chest and everyone was like, yeah. It was like a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was like the best thing ever. But
it hasn't happened, and this large amount of Planeswalker turnover hasn't quite happened yet. I mean, Venser passes away, and there was a ripple, maybe.
Right.
But he wasn't even in tier two with, you know, it's Elspeth and then Gideon, or those two fight back and forth, and then there's.
It'd
you
be
know,
like Tybalt, like finding out that Tybalt died. Everyone would be like, okay.
Right, right. You can't just kill the guys with the red shirts. That's right. You can see through that a mile away.
Exactly right. True. So seeing some of those, and especially as planes will be more condensed with sets happening literally every month and a half with, wow, two block sets, boom, 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 coming in hot. Now it's...
Let me provide a little bit of perspective there. The timing will still be the same as it ever was. It's just you'll have two worlds per year instead of one in a core set. We're not making sets faster than we were.
Right.
We're just moving
Settings. You're making settings faster.
Settings, yes.
Settings. Right.
Because the core set didn't really ever have a thing. I mean, yes, it was on Chandelar or this other theme, but it wasn't like you couldn't pick up any core set from – I don't know, M11 and be like, oh, this is corset M11. I know exactly where this is. I can place it. Cool.
Right. And well, not until Origins.
Until Origins, which right. you totally can. You're like, oh, I know exactly where this is. Oh, this is looks like Innistrad, but it's not Innistrad. Ah, Origins. Gotcha.
Right.
Which was really fun to see that I had that discussion with people playing, opening up some packs, playing in the event, and people were like, oh, what's this Innistrad place? And I'm like, we were just in Innistrad. Oh, biscuits, if we return, you guys are going to love that. And that's really exciting that having maybe two settings here could say, well, maybe we can revisit a place, and then there's a new place, or revisit place. And that's such an interesting storytelling narrative that, you know, it didn't, other than the Weatherlight storyline where they're like, oh, yeah, they're still doing Weatherlight stuff. You didn't really see radically different things in a given year.
Right. And I particularly, like, for my own enjoyment of what Planeswalkers are, they're adventurers, travelers. And the fact that in a calendar year, we get to see them doing the thing they do. They go places.
Right.
The old model was they are places. Like there was no going anywhere as a part of any story. It was curtains up and guess who's here? The whole gang. I'm going to enjoy seeing the story play out now where planeswalking matters. That's cool.
Well, so in explaining for that, say there was a lot of Dominaria for a very, very long time. And this ties into Vorthos creation, I swear. Did you paint and really think about that as you were making, you know, paintings to say, okay, I want this to be a grounded place in the plane, but I want to make it feel like someone can visit this and be like, oh, this place is different. Instead of making things familiar elements in them to say, oh, this is a goblin. I want to make goblin-y stuff. It's like, well, does it need to be that?
I don't. What specifically your question about Dominaria? The answer is no.
Interesting.
When Dominaria was the order of the day, there was no. Remember, Dominaria is blah. Like with Innistrad, it's like, remember, this place is dark and creepy.
Right.
Or with Theros, this place is sunlit and you know. Based upon Greek history,
there wasn't like a drive for a particular tone.
You can't be wrong on Dominaria. It's hard to pinpoint what it means. I mean, even in Time Spiral, as depressing as that visual, you know. I don't even know what the word is, like the tapestry that all the cards come together to make. At least we had that. Don't forget, this time it's depressing, or this time it's dusty waste. It's bleak. Otherwise, again, we would have just had anything. You could put it in the jungle. You could put it in a frozen land. You could put it in a volcano land. Like, it didn't matter.
Right. Interesting. If that was the theory of the day, and now we're traveling, so it's always, oh, we're having visitors, almost like you have a map. Every time you see a card, you're like, oh, what are my visual cues? What plane am I on? What am I doing? Was that enjoyable for you to work on that in Kamigawa, to see like everything's Kamigawa? Oh, okay, we're going all in on this.
Yes.
I need to turn off my brain and just do it. Boom, we're doing this live.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I don't know if I can speak for all of the artists, but I particularly enjoy trying to hit the curveball. You know, if someone says, do whatever you want, just make it a warrior with a sword. Nah, all right.
Yeah.
But if you said, make it a warrior with a sword in a land that's all frozen, then suddenly I have to do some thinking, and I start to imagine what it's going to look like with the armor and the sword reflecting all the, you know, bright light from the crust of the snow and all this and that. I mean, that could lead to a whole image gag. Kamigawa was one that I absolutely adored. The it was like a respite from things having to have meaning. Like, you want to make a painting like with a bunch of mouths and French fries? Like, go!
It is. It was almost like if magic art had an abstract period. That was like Kamigawa. Like, things just
Like, we were all on drugs and imagining, like, weird spiritual visions from ancient Japan. It was crazy. It was fun. Yeah.
So you just for some background, you started on what set? Like, as an artist, you started when?
Mercadian Masks.
Okay. And then your last set was?
New Phyrexia.
Okay. So you have a pretty large...
Although there were reprints since then in a bunch of sets.
I'm sure. Namely Goblin Pile Driver in Magic Origins.
Although now that there are no core sets anymore, reprints will be much rarer because you can't just reprint it where it doesn't fit the world.
Right. So, well, we could get reprints, but they would be with updated art.
With new art, yeah.
Right. What I meant was reprinted art.
Right. Okay.
But I'm sure, like any artist that's been around and making a lot of cards, I'm sure there's a couple pieces still floating around the office in this slush art pile that maybe might get used one day.
I don't have visibility into the slush pile at this point. I know that when I was, and this is 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Patrolling the slush pile, there was nothing usable in there.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of it was slush for a reason. Like, something about the art just didn't work out. And if it's not working, you're not going to use it.
Right. So then you started at Wizards, like actually working in Renton around what set?
That would be.
Do you remember?
Saviors of Kamigawa, I think.
Okay. And you came in as the creative team manager?
Just a
member of the creative
team. Yes.
Okay.
Super creative guy.
Yes.
And you did what was like kind of like your first, like, give us an idea, what was like your first project? Like, you start at WotC, you're an artist. What did they make you do?
I think it was pretty much instantaneously names and flavor text.
Okay, right. They just put you in charge of the team?
Yeah. Although there wasn't much of a team then, it was just, you know, three or four external writers that were handed to me. It's not like I had a team of people at the office that I was barking commands to. That wasn't the case at all.
Is that how it is now? As a external writer, I don't really have visibility into who else is on the team with me. I can just see other people writing, so I assume other people exist.
Yes.
Because I'm like, I did not write that, so someone else has to be there.
It is usually a combination of some people outside the company, some inside, ideally none of which are writers on the team. Ideally, all the good stuff would come from people outside, and the writers on the team could spend their time writing for product or developing story for 2 years down the road or whatever.
Right. Okay. So you were on the creative team.
There
for
were
how many
three
years?
People on the team at the time.
Who else was there with you? It was you and
Brady Dimermuth.
Brady.
Jeremy Cranford. Yep. And Brandon Bozzi.
Okay.
That's right.
And then you did that for how many years? Do you remember?
Almost two.
Okay. And then you left Wizards, right, for a little bit?
That's right. Yeah, I left for 4 years.
Okay. And then you came back, and what do you do now?
Got hooked.
What?
You got hooked back in, I mean, right away.
I was not I was not super stoked about leaving, but I'm a family man and I do what I got to do. But once my little ones, you know, got old enough and, you know, we had our sea legs as a little family unit, it became clear that we had our more options open at that point. And I remember, this is probably a month or so before my second kid was born, Brady gave me a call to ask me, "Hey, there's this job. Maybe you're a good fit." So I checked it out and I ended up, That's not true. I just amalgamated two stories. I got my first job at Wizards right before my kid was born. Actually, Mark Rosewater called me the day my daughter was born. So I'm sure that contributed to some of my baldness. That was a lot of stress.
Hey, your dad. Hey, you want to work at Wizards? Like, just head explode.
that was serious head explosion.
That's funny.
Brady called me to tell me about it, and I threw my hat in the ring. And my wife was a champ. She was willing to take the shot again, and that's 5 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, my fifth anniversary of my second tour.
The job that Brady wanted you to apply for, that still what you're doing now?
Yes. Okay. Although it has evolved considerably.
And what is that
exactly? I manage a team of six art directors, and all of these folks work on the expressions of our game that are off of cards. So the board game that Hasbro made, one of my guys art directed that. And Duel's Origins, one of my guys art directed that.
Okay.
Packaging, marketing, licensing, like anything that we do with partner companies, my guys handle that.
Right.
So the book, the San Diego Comic-Con book, for example.
Actually, that was one that initially was on my plate, but because it was so much in the wheelhouse of R&D creative, we moved it over there for Don Mirren to handle.
Right. Okay. So you would be, your team would be responsible for Tarkir having just the look of the packaging and the booster packs, yes, and that sort of thing. And
the closest thing to Vorthos territory that my team handles is commissioning the key art. So the art that goes on the box is handled by my team.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah. There's a lot of graphic design involved in so you do the whole I think you talked about this before, the Innistrad, how there's a moon hidden in the lettering. Was that?
Yes.
Were you there for that?
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you actually could do legitimate card, for example, Modern Masters has card art on it. Would that just be a handover, or you'd be we're going to do this and we're going to put it on our packaging? Also, you guys got to put this on the card.
There are times when it makes sense to put a card on, and the retro sets like Modern Masters, the ones that are thinking about and glorifying cards from the past, it makes sense to show them.
Right.
So Jeremy and I work out beforehand what the plan for that is going to be. And the last couple times, it has been card art that we've used for that.
Okay. So I get, how do you guys, now that you're kind of balancing between two different settings a year and also various supplemental products, how do you keep all of those different things looking unique on the shelf, but also still recognizable as these are all Magic products?
That is a great question. And the truth is, before a few years ago, we only were thinking about the first half. How do we make them each unique? And in some ways, we had been doing that on many levels. How do we make Innistrad a different approach than Lorwyn, than different than so on and so on? But there are some areas where commonality is crucial. And I remember being at a distributor conference, and R&D director Aaron Forsyth and I were just looking at a table filled with our products that were there for the distributors to take a look at. And on the table on the left was a whole bunch, the whole family of products from Born of the Gods. No, Journey into Nyx, the purple one.
Yes.
And next to it was the whole schlemiel from M15, which had that really stark black and white.
Yep. Badass. Right, right, right.
And Aaron said to me, each of those looks awesome, but are those even the same game? And I was like, shit. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we know it's the same. We see the outline of the logo. It's the same.
Right.
But other than that, like, there might be some kid at the store who just doesn't know. So since that minor shit-driven epiphany, I've really been thinking hard about what is the through line.
Right.
What can we make solid and keep and lean on for a while so that what changes becomes more evident?
Right, right.
It's like if you imagine having a car and your car is black and you put a window sticker in the back, and this week it's a Pittsburgh Steelers sticker. And next week you switch to the far superior Cleveland Browns sticker.
Oh,
done.
Shots fired.
Since the car is the same, what people are going to do is start scanning for the difference.
Right. It's kind of like Monopoly, how there's a million different versions of Monopoly. But when you look at that box, you know immediately that it's a Monopoly game.
Right.
Like, it's going to be the same game, but one of them is Pittsburgh. One of them is the horrible town of Cleveland. Like, it's it's all the same. So that, I mean, that's kind of like magic is similar in that, you know, you can say, hey it's all magic, but this one's Greek. This one's.
So does that involve a lot of
Tarkir or whatever?
Do you have market research to look into this to say, like, what's Pokemon up to? What's Yu-Gi-Oh? What's Skylanders doing? And you guys put them on the table and be like, ooh, we shouldn't look like that one. We shouldn't look like that one. We shouldn't look like that one.
Some of it happens naturally because we are conscientiously trying to make a visual offering that looks sophisticated. You're just not going to see the hard lines and blaring colors and the stuff that attracts the eye of a child. Like, that's not what we're trying to do. So in that regard, we're going to stand out from them. Also, when we do our market research, we tend to look at industries that are pushing entertainment well. We already feel like we run the cards aisle. In fact, if you look at Pokemon in particular, they have at least three products that have stolen our exact footprint of our products, of our packaging. Like, they're waiting for us to plow the way.
Right.
And they're latching on. I'm really proud of my packaging team. Packaging art director, her name is Lisa Hansen. She is 100% ass kicker, and she's done a number of things that have set the tone in that part of the aisle.
And when you say packaging, it's not just what it looks like, but it's actually like the shape of the.
Yeah, in this case, I'm talking structure complete.
Right. Okay.
Like, do you think it's like a magical coincidence that our Fat Pack has a Pokemon version right next door that has the exact same shape and size? They like to follow the leader, I guess.
Right. So now that, like you mentioned before, you know, your team has to now think about other mediums besides a trading card game. Like, you have to think about this tabletop game. You have to think about Magic duels, right? How has that kind of changed, or has it changed the way that you approach the way that the packaging is going to look? Because right now you can look at Magic duels, the tabletop game, and Origins, and they all kind of have this same visual tie-in between mm-hmm. the three products.
Well, that one was very deliberate.
Okay.
Those games were developed concurrently, or at least their development overlapped. And because they were all going to be revealed to market at the same time, we felt like it was going to make a bigger impact if they all had a similar presentation. So what that does is, if you buy Magic cards, if you buy Origins cards and you like your experience, and then you see something like that online, you might think, maybe I'll have the same kind of fun experience playing duels. And then you go to your Target and see the board game on the shelf, and you're like, wait a minute, where have I seen that combination of things? All I know is it was fun. Maybe I'll buy this thing. Like, that's right, very intentional.
Okay. Interesting.
Which is also new. I mean, even duels versions, even the logo was different in the past. I mean, you could say, oh, is this a standalone game? Are they different? Are they upgraded? I don't know. And now it's, oh, we're going multi-channel everything. It's Origins. It's like, oh, I know exactly what's going on, whatever I go to. I'm learning about 5 different planeswalkers, 10 planes. Got it. Cool.
It's very specific to the sort of moment of epiphany I spoke of earlier, trying to make things that can reflect each other, do that as often as possible. It just makes sense. It makes sense to connect things because Magic is so, it's like a, what is it? The Progenitist? Is he the one with 1,000 heads? Does he have a lot of heads? I don't remember.
Progenitus, yes, a bunch of them. I mean,
yeah, we don't really
know. He has multiple.
He has a bunch of heads. That's us. Like, yeah. Magic has so many heads. The kind of effect we have on consumers comes in so many shapes and sizes. If it's that complex, simplifying anything is going to be helpful.
Right.
It's going to be more beneficial. And I'm sure the brand team is super excited anytime things are like, we're going to take chocolate and peanut butter and mix it all for this and this and this. They're like, oh, great.
I would say that they are as involved as anyone in deciding which flavors we're smushing together.
Fair enough.
Do you ever get opportunities to kind of dabble back in the creative side, like story side at all, or flavor text? Like,
yes, I have. It was a few years ago. I asked Jenna Helland, who manages the writing team, to keep my name open on all the flavor text things. So when this mythological free time happens, I can jump in and start typing some stuff. And okay. I forced that to happen a little while ago, and I jumped in and started writing stuff, and it took me about half an hour to realize that I was atrophied beyond hope. Like, whatever muscles I had flexed into shape back in the day, oh, goodness. So I just retreated from the keyboard completely.
So is that also a part of working there during the day job? Do you paint at all anymore? Do you still get that ability at all in any way, shape, or form? Because I remember Jeremy Jarvis talking about that to say, I haven't lifted a paintbrush in a long time.
I have not done any art for Magic in 5 years. I've painted some stuff on my own at home, But even that, you know, I get home and I'm all worked out. So it's tough to get my face back in front of the computer or in front of an easel or whatever.
Right. Family's
happened a couple times, but it's rare.
So do you have any paintings, like original work around the house left, like for magic, or have
I sold my last one just a couple of months ago?
Oh wow!
The last of the last.
Which one was that?
Shared Fate.
Okay.
From who knows what way back in the old days.
Oh sure. Interesting. So do you get pulled?
That's me and my wife.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
We're hearing that story.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's kind of why I was holding on to it. But then after a while, I realized that I didn't have it hung up and it was just sitting in a box. So I said, let him have it.
Yeah. Fair enough. So, I mean, if, you know, as the jobs change and your roles change, and I mean, even aging of, oh, I have kids now. I don't really want to paint at night. I'd like to hang out with my children, which seems great. Is there opportunities you get in your day job that isn't sitting down pounding out flavor text? Because I've been on two teams and it's, oh my God, is it time consuming? It's difficult. It takes hours to be creative. I mean, do you get pulled into creative meetings or look-sees when they have the concept art in or any of those things that they just like, say, hey, Matt, what are you doing for the next 15?
I purposefully give them their space. I don't think because I have a history in that area that means I should meddle in other people's business. Would I enjoy being part of story or art development? Sure. But I know that those bases are so well covered, they don't need me. And if they had need for help, sure. You know, I'm happy to provide it, but they generally don't. Like, their teams are chock full of good people. And I'm actually pretty surprised at how little I feel the pull back into their, you know, into their piece of the business. There's just too many challenges on my side of the fence to really let my mind wander.
Right. Turns out making something visually cohesive, super easy. Just first thing out of the gun. Yup, doing it that color.
It's easy.
Call it a day.
Especially easy when there's 10 art directors in the book.
With the opinions. I mean, just very, very agreeable to anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just a lot of people yelling.
Actually, you know what? People are pretty... The art folk are pretty civil. They're good. They're good to each other.
That's good. So, all right. So,
Vorthos is the podcast you thought we were going to have.
We did not. It's fine. It's
well, totally fine. That's the nature of the beast. I mean,
that's the beauty of Snack Time.
we had Steve Belladon on, and he wanted to talk about one thing. Or Aunt Scott Waters saying, "Do you want to talk about concepting how I did trees?" And we're like, yeah, okay.
Oh, my God.
We just got on a 30-minute tangent.
We
about...
let him talk.
I want to talk about trees.
We seriously, he, for his flavor gem, he talked about Yavimaya Coast for over 30 minutes. And it was the greatest 30. I was just like blown. I'm like,
I said nothing for a half an hour.
He thought so hard and deep about those trees. I was just like, dude, you are awesome. I'm like, you're awesome.
I mean,
it was nuts. It was nuts.
I mean, Matt, every single one of them is different. And as you know, as you were kind of trailblazing, writing about Vorthos content, we're sitting here saying, no community members are doing this. It's not like there's every site has one of their staff writers say, oh, you're going to be the flavor guy. That doesn't exist. There's like a handful of us, and we're the only flavorful podcast. This is it. We're the only ones. So for us to really see, like, okay, well, what do people want to hear about? What's interesting? And, I mean, the list of people we would love to talk to and bring back on is voluminous.
Well, we're going on 90 minutes here. I hope they're interested, or no one will hear these.
I hope so. You will be the longest one yet, Matt.
So just to wrap it up, I think I'm interested just to know, like, how does it feel for you just knowing that 10 years ago, you wrote this, what you thought was going to be a one-off article, and in doing so ended up kind of creating an identity for people like us who just care about this stuff, like this kind of the flavor, the taste of magic. Like, how does it feel to like know that this has been going on for 10 years and it's only getting stronger?
And we actually care. We're not actually lying. We totally care. And it's awesome.
I would be lying if I didn't say that it tickles me every time I hear someone else say that weird word. It really does. I'm super fortunate to have been like Forrest Gump, walking by at the right place at the right time to just a little bit tilt the direction of, you know, where things are going with magic. This one being one, just sort of raising the like being lucky enough to be the mouth that got to open up this conversation about flavor and enjoying the parts of magic that aren't about playing. That's awesome. And the whole, I would say, fortuitous confluence of things that led to me naively starting meetings to talk about making Planeswalker cards. Like, I had no idea how you are not supposed to do that. I was just new enough that I didn't have enough enemies to immediately shut me down, and just new enough not to be like, wow, this isn't a thing we do. Like, in both cases, I just kind of threw a pebble in the pond, and the ripples have become bigger than I ever would have imagined.
Well, we thank you for that, Matt. I mean, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be discussing this.
You probably
the first throw. Maybe.
It might not be called what it's called.
It might not be called Snack Time.
Yeah, there is no taste, right? Oh, boy. All right. So if people have any follow-up questions or any other things that that we'd like to get out, I mean, we'll have it in the comments below as people can comment. But, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. I had a great time learning about stuff that I haven't thought about in a while, like packaging even. But it's interesting to know because we don't really ever talk about it ever.
No way, man. The thanks are all going from me to you guys. Like I said, it tickles me every time I hear somebody say it. And we've just talked about it for an hour and a half. So that's pretty awesome.
That is cool. All right.
Maybe one of these days we can actually talk about magic cards.
Yeah, maybe.
That'll be next time, next go around.
All right. I'm game.
So we'll put you down as Matt. Open to talk about, and maybe, you know, the next time you have something cool to announce, interesting from the cap side, we would love to have you on. Maybe even a short little segment to say, hey, I want to talk about this thing for 10 minutes. What are you guys doing? We'd be happy to do that. I think that'd
be definitely cool. For sure. If anyone wants to get a hold of you, what's the easiest way for them to do that? Like, if they have questions about your artist proofs that maybe you have lying around or something like that.
Normally I would direct people to my website, but it has been static for 5 years. It's so sad.
So sad.
If I say my email address, will it get transcribed, like written down anywhere on your site? Cause that just gets you in spam trouble.
No, I don't know. Cause I mean, I would have to personally do that. Okay. So I just won't.
They can email me at matt1@kavada.com.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
For any and all questions and goodies and other niblets.
Oh, I like niblets.
What about you, Mike? Where can they reach you?
Oh, they get a hold of me. I'm on the Twitters at inventively called @VorthosMike because my last name is very difficult to spell. It's Linneman and there's four N's. Rhymes with cinnamon and apparently it's difficult. So I said, nope, done. @VorthosMike, we're doing it in there. And obviously on Gathering Magic every Wednesday, I always put an article up.
And I'm on Twitter at AntMTG, and I also have an article on Gathering Magic. And I started a Tumblr recently, so you can check that out too. Comment on there. I just talk about flavor text and how I look at art. And today I wrote about some elf who to me looked like they were smelling a fart, and that inspired me to write flavor text. So it's definitely not serious.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, it's more just entertaining. It's me just venting. So
yeah. Yay, social media.
Yeah, right.
It's all about the farts.
All right.
But anyway, all right, guys, thank you so much for those of you who hung in for the full 90 minutes, and tune in next time.